From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, remembering Robert E. Howard, the Texan who dreamed up Conan the Barbarian.
And you'll see, even in things that really don't have much to do with Texas, and again, most people would say Conan does not, there's a lot of Texan in his stories.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. From his writing desk in the small town of Cross Plains, Texas, Robert E. Howard spun stories that today readers continue to devour and wish for more. Howard's pulp fiction stories continue to be extremely influential, especially in the genres of fantasy, sword and sorcery, and horror. Though he died young by suicide at 30 in 1936, his legacy is lasting, especially with one character, Conan the Cimmerian, also known as Conan the Barbarian. Howard's imagined worlds were gritty, violent, sensual, and individualistic. They emphasized action, brawn, independence, personal glory, and a critical view of civilization, organized religion, and law. And these themes were developed and influenced by what he saw and experienced living in the Dust Bowl Depression era Texas. Willard M. Oliver has written a new biography of Howard called Robert E. Howard, The Life and Times of a Texas Author.
He was born a Texan in Pister, Texas. And he, at an early age, his father was a country doctor and was fairly peripatetic. So they traveled around quite often throughout the state. They lived in many, many towns, about a dozen, before he finally settled in Cross Plains, Texas. And he would remain there until his death in 1936. He absolutely loved Texas. He loved Texas history. He loved, the folk stories, talking to the elders. I had one of his quotes I put on the back of a T-shirt that I had made up. And what Howard had said was, "I love Texas so much that I wish I'd had a hand in building the present greatness of the state." And he was absolutely a Texan. And I'm not the first to point this out. Mark Finn, in his biography of Robert E. Howard, pointed this out. I continued it, but what I did was I dug a little deeper in terms of the sense of community, especially with Cross Plains. Even though he was somewhat of an outsider to the Cross Plains small town environment, it still was a product of what shaped him and developed him. Most of his stories are really frontier stories. So even when you would talk about Conan, you're talking about a frontier tale. His humorous character, Breckinridge Elkins, was a Texan. And you'll see, even in things that really don't have much to do with Texas, and again, most people would say Conan does not, there's a lot of Texan in his stories.
Robert E. Howard grew up around the oil fields with his dad, because his dad was working these towns to town, boom and bust towns. He saw and he rubbed shoulders with the roughnecks and the drifters and the brawlers and the men who settled their disputes with a fist. So he saw that.
And in a way, it developed him in several different ways. One was he was absolutely appalled at what a oil boom brought into the town. You had the roughnecks coming in to work the oil fields. But then you had all of the other stuff that came in, the prostitutes, the gambling, the drunks, just the hanger-ons, all of these people, and how corrupt they were. And that incensed him. He made a comment one time that, a boy or a child will grow up a lot faster in a boomtown because of all of the things that they will see. On the flip side, it afforded him opportunities for some of the events and people and characters that he met along the way, including the roughnecks, et cetera, that he was able to integrate into his fiction writing. In addition, it gave him more opportunities for boxing. Well, he sparred with his friends in the ice house in Cross Plains, Texas. A lot of the roughnecks would often meet late at night to drink beer on a hot summer day, but then they would also participate in boxing matches with each other. And Howard joined in on these. And so Howard very much was shaped a lot by not only, the Texas and the opportunities with the roughnecks, et cetera, but then also by the boxing culture of the time period, which was very popular.
He was living at a time where still the stories of the Texas gunfighters of the Wild West were still being passed around in oral history, that you would hear stories about people like John Wesley Hardin in bars and places.
And that was one of the things about Howard was he loved listening to the older people's stories. Whenever he would see a couple guys sitting, watching the road and the world pass by and they were old, he would stop because he knew that they lived on the frontier. Howard was only 10, well, 15, 20 years removed from when Texas was the frontier. And so there were people living that had that memory. And remember what I said is that all of the stories were frontier stories. So he had a treasure trove of people that he could talk to and listen to their stories. His girlfriend's his one and only girlfriend, Novalyn Price, lived with her mother and grandmother. And when they were dating, Howard would go over to her house, but he would often talk to her grandmother because she could tell all kinds of, stories about growing up on the Texas frontier. And he would sit there and listen to her. And of course, when you're old, having somebody young listening to you talk was great. And so everybody fell in love with him for that reason. But this is where he got a lot of the stories firsthand information about the frontier.
So Robert E. Howard was able to gather all this, these influences, and bring it together and write about it in stories like for Conan and others, and do it in a way that draw people in with almost, it seemed like he had lived those adventures, although he was in that isolated town of Cross Plains, Texas.
Yeah. I mean, he also was widely read as a kid and growing up. There was a lot of literary influences upon him. I mean, it's just, I spend a whole chapter talking about the literary influences on him. One of his favorite authors was Jack London. So you can see a lot of London's writings about adventure, et cetera, translating into Howard's writing. He read
Edgar
the
Rice Burroughs.
Edgar Rice Burroughs, the Tarzan, the pulps at the time, The Adventurer, which was considered one of the best pulps out there. And so all of these different writers also influenced him along the way, which is what made him a really good writer. But what really put him over the top, and Hemingway once told this to his wife, the secret to writing is in the poetry. And Howard was a poet. He wrote dozens, hundreds of poems that are in a collected 3-volume collection, and they are fantastic. Even pe some of the people that were leading poets at the time period recognized the value of his work. However, poetry was changing. He was more 19th century poetry, and 20th century poetry was moving more toward free. Kind of that freestyle, not the rhyming meters that Howard liked, or so he got caught up in that. Plus, you didn't make a lot of money writing poetry. So he pretty much, in a way, abandoned it, but that poetry shows up in his prose. And he is a fantastic writer that is greatly, greatly under, I mean, undercredited, undercut for. Because he wrote for the pulps. And yet he could write a paragraph that brought the story alive, gave you all of the description you needed to know, and did it in a almost poetical way throughout his stories. And he's writing for the pulps. It's just, it always amazes me how good his writing could be.
So do you think that he absorbed the rough honor codes of these roughnecks and drifters and brawlers that he came into contact with, and that he was able to, and their contempt for weakness, physical weakness, and use that to develop his heroes?
Kind of. I would say that they definitely influenced the type of characters, because he talks a lot about this, that, you know, the people that you meet, you know, you take what was real about them and you put them into your character. And so we should never say who that person is, or you make it an amalgamation of different people. But Howard had very much his own kind of code of honor, his code of ethics, his own way of thinking. And it's really kind of encapsulated, I think, in what he said, what he wrote, when he described his particular life and what drove it. And I open that the entire book with the quote, "My desire for personal freedom has been the ruling passion of my whole life." And he ends up with a very unique way of carrying out that particular, you know, passion. But he really developed himself in his own way, in his own style, in his own fashion. The people that he met within the small towns within Texas on the frontier, you know, the people that had grown up and experienced the frontier, they definitely influenced his writing.
It seems like his main characters often have a disdain for civilization, and that they would rely more on their own strength, willpower, and cunning. And are these the characteristics that he admired?
Very much so. I mean, when you're talking about the frontier, you're talking more barbarism than you are civilization. It's the people that are striving on the frontier that eventually are creating civilization. But then civilization goes in a different way. And Howard began to argue in his correspondence with H.P. Lovecraft about that difference. Lovecraft, who was the writer of what's come to be known as the Cthulhu mythos, you know, supernatural horror, he very much was in support of, or in defense of, civilization, that's what we have created and what we have mastered, and that's what makes us human. And Howard didn't think so, because he argued that there are so many downsides to civilization, that people become corrupt, they become obsessed with sex, they become just no longer rooted in reality. And he found that the civilization can be destructive to people. And so he kind of yearned, or he talked about, you know, he wished he had grown up and lived in the frontier time period. And so the arguments go back and forth between them. They're collected together in a two-book series called A Means to Freedom. And it is a fabulous exchange between the two, arguing and debating this barbarism versus civilization.
You're listening to Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation with Willard M. Oliver, author of Robert E. Howard, The Life and Times of a Texas Author. Part of the story that's so interesting about Robert E. Howard is that when you read the stories about Conan, or you're exposed to them in pop culture, and then you hear about how this was all written by this one guy in this very isolated Texas town, who was himself a very tragic figure. You can enjoy the stories, but then when you learn this part of it, it does actually add to the mystique.
Well, very much so. And there's more that adds to that. Probably his most in-depth character is Solomon Kane, who sees himself as kind of a warrior for God in a way.
He's a fanatical persona.
Puritan. Yeah, very much so. But he metes out justice by his sword. Now, he has qualms about that, but that's what he feels he's called to do, to right the wrongs. It's kind of this moral dilemma. It's probably his most complicated character. King Cole is kind of the brooding king who the weight of civilization is on his shoulders, and it's not exactly what he wants to be doing. Conan becomes much more the free spirit. He does things with his own code of honor, and if somebody tells him this is what you have to do, he bristles at that. But if he makes his own choices to do it, then it's his choice. He has that freedom. And again, Howard's concept of freedom comes with barbarism. You have more freedom in barbarism than you do in civilization because of all of the rules and everybody telling you what to do and dictating your life. So
And that
again,
civilization was more corrupt, dishonest, not to be admired.
correct, very much so.
He also was seems to be critical of organized religion. Conan's god, Crum,
Crumb, yeah.
he is a god that is not a benefactor. He doesn't he actually he only he despises weakness, and he doesn't really step in to aid his devotees. He just hopes that they, I mean, he arms them with the force to fight, but that's it.
Yeah, because if he called upon him, that would be a sign of weakness. Howard's upbringing, I mean, his mom was Methodist, his dad was Baptist, so that creates an interesting issue. But he seemed like he was much more raised in the Methodist and faith. And you can also see in his writing, he's very familiar with the Bible. I mean, there's a lot of things that come out in his stories, especially some of the earlier ones, where you can see, hints of he knew the Bible. But eventually, probably the quote that he got to that kind of sums it up is he says, "There's not enough evidence to believe there is not a God, a higher being, but there isn't enough evidence to say there's not." And so, again, he's kind of agnostic, ambivalent, really not a practicing Christian or anything. But it, his characters do have, I mean, again, Solomon Cain has probably the closest connection. But they all have this kind of relationship of, you're an individual, you're on your own, it's your own freedom, your own independence, and you're the one that has to make it through this world. And
Robert E. Howard, as you say, he wrote for the Pulps. What so tell me about what are the Pulps and where were they in the scope of literary society?
there used to be these dime novels that were shipped in the late 1800s, and they could be mailed to people. And they were typically, I mean, basically a novel. You'd have them of like Buffalo Bill and, Wild Bill Hickok and all of these, typically a lot of Western characters. Well, the post office actually changed its rates for these types of magazines, and the price boosted up, and it was too expensive to ship these dime novels. So that kind of died, and what replaced it was largely the pulp magazines. These were typical magazine size, but they were printed on cheap pulp paper, which made them cheap. And then the covers could have very alluring covers. And as time progresses in the 20s into the 30s, they become much more alluring, much more sensational to grab people's attention. Because at some points, I mean, look at some of these old pictures. And there could be 150, 200 pulp magazines on a newsstand. So they're all competing for space. So you want the most sensational cover. And of course, Weird Tales, the editor figured out that, well, sex sells. And so make it very alluring. But the pulps typically paid a very low rate to its authors. It was usually a penny a word. If you were really good, you might get 2 or 3 cents. A few writers got a nickel, but for the most part, it was a penny a word. And so the more words you wrote, the more likely you were to make some money. And this is where, people like Edgar Rice Burroughs with Tarzan and John Carter, Warlord of Mars, started. And some of the pulps really rose up and became prominent, such as Adventure. But what happened is, especially by the 1920s, you start seeing instead of just having short story or some of these generic ones where all kinds of different stories are in there, they started specializing. So Weird Tales was for the supernatural. There was even one pulp magazine called Railroad Magazine. I think that was the title. And it was all about railroads. So any story about a railroad was in there. Sports stories, boxing stories. And so they could start to niche and try to command, the audience of readers at that time. There was also an appeal to the common person because, paperbacks or books tended to be expensive, and it was usually books written for elites by elites, and it wasn't things that the common person was interested in. So pulp magazines, which were cheap, anywhere from a dime to a quarter for the magazine, which could be 200, 300 pages of all of these stories, short stories, continuing, novelettes, sometimes even, entire books where it's serialized over a time period. And so it gave people, it interested them, and it gave them the kind of reading that they wanted to read.
Many people say if you only know Robert E. Howard for writing Conan, then you're missing out on so much.
Very much so. I remember as a kid when I discovered Conan, I was, so excited, and I bought up all the Conans, and then I discovered there was other characters, Solomon Kane, Bran Mac-Moran, King Cole, and I'm reading all of these. And then I discovered, I think it was Breckinridge Elkins at that point, and it said Robert E. Howard, and I bought it, and I read them, and I was like, this is really weird because it's humorous, it's funny, it's laugh out loud funny, very much in the tall tale perspective, but I was absolutely 100% convinced this was not the same Robert E. Howard.
Well, it's the tall tale Texas oral tradition.
Very much so. And he was good at it. And he was really good at it. Highly recommend it because it's very different. He also wrote a little bit more serious stories. He wrote some westerns. His historical fiction is fantastic. And it's also hard to believe that he only wrote for 11 years. I mean, all of this that he produced was in 11 years.
It's very prolific.
Very prolific. And it just, and not everything is of super high quality. I mean, don't get me wrong on that, but he had a lot of stories that were just, I mean, as close to perfect as you can get.
But he was a tragic figure. Of course, he died by his own hand at the age of 30, and there's been right after the death of his mother that he was very close with. But there's also other factors that may have led to that as well. His isolation, frustration. Was he given to bouts of depression?
Yes, very much so. He blamed it on his Irish side, which he didn't really have much of an Irish side. He had some, but not to the extent that he got caught up in that Hibernophile kind of period that was popular in the early 20th century to be Irish. And so, in a way, he willed himself to become Irish. And so a lot of times when he would go into those depressive moods, he would blame it on that. My take on it is where it really came from was kind of that problem of modern man. It started showing up in the late 19th century, early 20th century. It really comes down to, although it had many different names and the names changed over time, it's really chronic fatigue. We live in a world that's so fast, and you have to make so many decisions, and there's so many things to do, and you're so pressed for time and that busy, busy life that it starts taking a toll on the body. And you need those breaks, and you need to get away. But when you write and live for a penny a word, you've got to write. Otherwise, you don't get paid. So he had to push himself long hours and writing, et cetera. I think that began to take a toll on his body and his mental state. There were many other things as well. He became fascinated somewhat with the idea of suicide. More and more, you can see this development over time. And ultimately, he talks about possibly, he suggests, you can read within the writing, he's suggesting that he may do away with himself. There's only a few times where he talks about it much more directly, but you can see his thinking about it is developing over time. And then in a way he kind of stops because his mom, who has tuberculosis, starts having the flare-ups and the problems and the night sweats, and he essentially, in many ways, he has to become her caretaker. He was dedicated to her. In other words, this is my mom and she's dying, and so I can't abandon her. But part of it is when he found out that she was not going to live, I mean, when she was literally on her deathbed, he asked the nurse, is she going to live? And the nurse was trying to be honest and said, no, she's probably not going to. She was in a coma at this point. She probably will not wake up. And at that point, he's free of his responsibility. And so now he could carry out what he had, in a sense, planned or had long known he would ultimately do. And that was he took his life with a handgun.
How well known was Robert E. Howard at the time of his death?
Very well among the circle of pulp readers and fellow writers, especially writers within the Weird Tales circle like H.P. Lovecraft, Clark Ashton Smith, August Derleth, E. Hoffman Price, etc. He was very well known, very well respected, and then the readers. That to me, that was an important part of the biography, was to make sure I included not what so much what people think today about Howard, but what did people think about his writings when he was alive. And that was the beauty of these, especially with Weird Tales, where you have the irie where readers can write in and tell them, I like this story, I love this author. Or they can write in and say, I hated this story and I hate this author. And it influenced Farnsworth Wright, the editor of Weird Tales. Well, people, the readers absolutely loved Howard. They equated some of his writings to, things that they had read in the Odyssey, and they were just blown away by some of his characters, including Conan.
But he
And
wasn't. But he
so,
wasn't a household word. He wasn't well known outside of that.
no, not in the least.
So today, though, Robert E. Howard, Conan, especially, I mean,
Yeah.
these are household.
Household names. Oh, very much
They're
so.
brand names. They're
Yeah.
IP. This.
Yes. And much in the same way as like Tarzan of the books, Tarzan of pop culture, two different characters. James Bond of the books versus James Bond of the pop culture, two different characters. It's the same with Conan. But everything
Yeah.
that's been created with Conan is not Robert E. Howard's Conan, which is usually why they refer to it as Conan the Barbarian, whereas Howard wrote Conan the Cimmerian. But I
What do you
mean,
think he would make of the fact that his work has lived?
yeah, I've often thought about that. I think he would be amused. And he'd probably be happy to know that he finally made it.
Willard M. Oliver is the author of Robert E. Howard's The Life and Times of a Texas Author. It's published by the University of North Texas Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters at tpr.org, and download Texas Matters wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.